All right, we'll say good morning, Mark. Good morning. Let's pick up. Let's pick up. We left off the two dots, Yud Amud Beis, V'Amar Rabba. Amar Rabba. We'll say also again, just announcing a thank you to Stephen Drazen. There are Gemara Shabbos in the back. If anybody needs a Gemara, they are for sale there. For the price which Shabbos charges us, $17. It's a beautiful addition. Stephen Hashem, he's donated his time and his services. So thank you to Stephen. We're probably gonna leave it here for the next couple of days. Whatever we don't use, we're gonna take back to them. So again, if you want a Gemara, $17 in the back. Says the Gemara. Ba'amar Rav Bar Mechasya, Amar Rav Chama Bar Gurya, Amar Rav. Li Olam Yoram Abayz about 7 lines up from the bottom. Ba'amar Rav Bar Mechasya, Amar Rav Chama Bar Gurya, Amar Rav. Li Olam Yachzor Adam V'Yeshev Be'ir Shishivasa Krova. A person should always try to live in a city that has been recently settled. Shemitoch Shishivasa Krova, because since it's been recently settled, Avonoseha Mu'atin. There is a small amount of collective sin. The idea that Gemara is really expressing, which is the Rambam highlights this idea in Hilchos Tshuva as well. The Rambam explains that when you're an inhabitant of a city, the Rambam is really extended to being inhabitant of the world, so ultimately you're not just judged based on your own actions, but you're also judged on the collective activity of the in the city in which you live. So therefore the Gemara gives a good answer. The Gemara says, therefore, live in a city that has been recently settled, because the assumption is if it's been recently settled, its collective sin is relatively little. So the Gemara says, where do we know this from? Shine Emar, because the 4 lines are from the bottom, Yuram Days, Shine Emar, Hine Noha Irazos Krova, Lonos Shama, Vihi Mitzar. It's interesting enough, the Gemara quotes the Pasik in Sefer Bereishis by Sdom. When after, right, Sdom is being destroyed, the Malachim have saved Lot and his family, and Lot puts in a request as to where he wants to go. And he says, literally translated, there is this city, there is this city over here, Krova, that is close, Lonos Shama, to go ahead and escape there, Vihi Mitzar. Now, Vihi Mitzar, the Gemara's understanding to mean is, it's small. So the Gemara says, well, what does this mean? My Krova, even the Krova de Mekarva, if you're telling me that Krova literally means that it's close, Vizuta, and Lot is saying the city is small, Vaha Kahazula. So if it's so close and if it's so small, the Malachim would be able to see this for themselves. Lot would not have to give the description. Ela, Mitroshi Shivasa Krova, Va'arvanoseha Mutzarin. Rather, says the Gemara, what Lot really meant is that what he meant by Krova was not a description of geography, of geographic distance, but Krova means what? That it was settled recently, Mitzar, and therefore its collective sin is relatively minor. So Lot felt, after seeing everything that he saw in Sdom, his best bet for relocation was to go to a place that had a relatively clean slate. Because again, Lot, the reason why it's so powerful with Lot is because Lot, were it not for the merit of Avram Avinu, Lot would have been held collectively responsible with the residents of Sdom. Therefore, Lot understands that now when choosing his next place to live, he should find a place where there's relatively little collective sin. Amar Rabbi Abin Maikra, what's the Pasek Tichsiv? Listen to this, very interesting. Imalta na Shama. So the Torah says, it's the same buzz we quoted before, Imalta na Shama. Now, literally translated, it means, I will please escape to there. So the Gemara does something very interesting, which you don't see in Gemara too often. No, bigematria nun v'chad. You don't see a lot of gematrias in Gemara. But the Gemara says, na, which again seems to be a superfluous word within this pasuk, is 51. 51, v'havi shosdom nun ubeis. So interestingly enough, how old was this city? The city was 51. How old was Sdom? Sdom was 52. So the idea is even the year difference, hopefully Lot felt, buys him a little bit of time. It's only been settled for 51 years. Lot was settled for 52 years. Also understand, there weren't, this was, okay. Vishavasa, top of Yud Aleph. Vishavasa Chavav. But interestingly enough, Sdom did experience 26 good years. 26 good years of Shalom. The Chsibur is the Gemara. Get this from Shteimes Reishana Avdu as Kedar LaOmer, because remember, Sdom was one of the vassal states. that served the king Kedala Omer, Ushlosha Sve Shana Mardo, and for 13 years they rebelled, Uba'aba'a Sashana, and in the 14th year, right, after those 25 years, so in year 26, right, ultimately is when the downward descent of Sdom began. So for 26 years they enjoyed relative peace and tranquility in Sdom. V'omer Rava Bar Mechasya Omer Rav Chama Bar Guri Omer Rav. Kol is very interesting halacha. Kol ir shegagoseha givon mi beis hakneses. Any city in which the roofs are higher than the shul, chareva, such a city will be destroyed. Such a city will be destroyed. So the Gemara says, shene emar liromeim es beis elokenu ula ha'amid es charvosav. It's interesting that the Gemara quotes the pasuk to go ahead and exalt, to uplift the house of our God, and to go ahead and establish all of the ruins. See, interestingly enough, the Gemara, the way the Gemara is darshing that pasuk is, how do you go ahead and establish the ruins, meaning make sure that the things in the city don't become ruins? How? L'roam is based elokeinu. By uplifting the shul, by ensuring that the shul is the highest point within the city. So the Gemara says, v'hani mili bebatin. But that's only true when it comes to homes. Right, that's saying that the roof of the shul has to be higher than the roofs of all of the homes in the city. Aval bekashkushe v'avrure. This is actually very interesting. If you take a look, Rashi, for just a moment, Rashi translates, kashkushe v'avrure, biryonos u'migdolim. Literally, forts and towers. Forts, which means non-residential structures. The idea is, the Gemara is saying over here, is that the shul has to be that it's not appropriate for someone to be living higher than the shul. They always have to be below the shul. But for non-residential structures, that we don't care about so much. Amar Rav Ashi, this is actually interesting thing. Amar Rav Ashi, ana avdi lemasa mechasya dilo charva. So Rav Ashi says, I am responsible for ensuring that Masa Machasya was not destroyed. So what does that mean? So Rav Ashi was saying that apparently he was the Rosh Yeshiva in Masa Machasya, the Abbez in Masa Machasya, and he made sure that none of the homes were ever built taller than the Shul. So the Gemara says, one second, V'hacharva, but Masa Machasya was destroyed. I hate to rain on your parade, right? But Masa Machasya was destroyed. To which the Gemara Rav Ashi says, Me'osa avon lo charva. Masa Machasya was destroyed, but Masa Machasya at least was not destroyed because of that sin. So Rav Ashi at least saying that I made sure that that particular issue would not be an issue of Masa Machasya. We still had many other problems in Masa Machasya, but that wasn't one of them. Okay? I'm sorry? How does one know that there were other problems?
Yes.
What do you mean?
No,
so the Gemara is saying, because again, the Gemara elsewhere talks about Masa Mechasya. Masa Mechasya did have other problems. They had other Averos that were ultimately goring their destruction. But Rav Ashi just saying this was not it. We'll say, just Yishin Halach L'maisa, this is how we pass. We pass that the shul ideally is supposed to be the highest structure within the particular city for homes. For homes. Interestingly enough, this was adopted by the church as well. Right, this became part of church doctrine as well. And ultimately, over in Gullahs, obviously, this is much harder to establish. Yeah, as long as it's the highest point. It doesn't have to be actually the greatest number of stories. It just has to be the highest in the city.
Don't forget the outline of the building fund.
I'm sorry?
The building fund.
The building fund, right. This is how I'm going to sound, the building fund, right. All right. Amar Rava Bar Mechasya. Amar Rav Chaim Bar Goryo Amar Rav. Tachas Yishmael Velo Tachas Nochri. It is better to serve an Ishmaelite, right, the Yishmael, than it is to serve a Nochri. Now, interestingly enough, the Gemara says over here, Rashi says, Velo Tachas Nochri Edomim. Nochri over here refers to someone from Edom. From Edom. Why, Rashi says, Shahayi Rishayim Yoser. Because ultimately, they were exceptionally wicked. So meaning, if you have to choose somebody to work for, better to work for a Yishmaelite, better to work for an Arab, than it is to work for an Edomite. Okay? Tachas Nochri, Velo Tachas Chabar. It is better to work for an Edomite than it is a Chabar. Who is the Chabar, Rashi says? Uma Mibnei Parsim. They were apparently a group within the Persian Empire. Okay, apparently they were not such good people. Tachas Chabar, listen to this. Better to work for a Chabar below Tachas Tamut Chochem. Better to work for a Chabar than it is to work for a Tamut Chochem. So what's the pshat there? Look at Rashi. Tamut Chochem. Im Yaknitenu Ya'anishenu. Because the reason is, if you mistreat a Talmid Chacham in any way, the repercussions are exceptionally severe. So the idea is, if you're working for someone, it's inevitable that at some point in time, the employer might act in a disrespectful way to the employee. So the Gemara says, then better not to work for a Talmud Chacham, because if you work for a Talmud Chacham and you mistreat him, the punishment is very severe. Tachas Talmud Chacham, velo tachas yasam va'amana. Similarly, it is better to work for a Talmud Chacham than it is to work for an orphan or a widow. Because again, Rashi, that same Rashi there says, v'chem yasam va'amana, mipnei shedim asan mitzuya. Because there's a very special punishment, a severe punishment for those who cause pain to the Yasam and Amana. The Yasam and Amana are already people who struggle a lot in life, and if you in any way exacerbate their pain, the repercussions are very severe. V'amar Rava bar Nachasya, Amar Rav Chama bar Gurya, Amar Rav. Kol choli, v'lo choli me'ayin. I'll take any sickness, but not literally a sickness of the intestines. Rashi says, choli, hu choli aruch. Choli refers to a long-term illness. Haminavna v'holech umatish koach, kegon ashta v'choli harosh. It refers to a sickness which is ongoing and ultimately depletes the strength of man. So Rav Chaim Bar Gurya says, in the name of Rav, the truth is, nobody wants any sickness. But if you have to have sickness, best that it should not be some stomach-related sickness. His idea over here, of course, is because a stomach-related sickness not only debilitates you, but also prevents you from engaging in certain matters of spiritual pursuit. Depending on the nature of the stomach illness, one may not be able to daven, one may not be able to learn, one may not be able to go into the base measure. So he's not asking for sickness, but if I have to have a sickness, let it not be a stomach sickness. Kol ke'ev, I'll take any pain, velo ke'ev lev, but not heart pain. Rashi says, ke'ev hu holech uba. Ke'ev, unlike choli, which is an enduring sickness, ke'ev is a, it comes and goes. There's a word for that. What? It's transient, okay, transient. All right, it comes and goes. I'm sorry?
Intermittent,
good. Intermittent pain. All right, good. Velo ke'ev leiv. So I'll take any pain, but not pain in my heart. Kol mechush. So now we get to mechush. Rashi says chashasha ba'amal efi shavikal. So the best way to translate the mechush is some kind of temporary discomfort. Temporary discomfort. So it's okay to have any kind of temporary discomfort, but not a headache. Why? Because again, the logic is a headache might only be fleeting, but if it's, it may only be temporary. But if it's bad enough, it could literally be debilitating. So what he's saying over here is, I'll take. We can't. It would be wonderful not to have any kind of sickness in life, but if I'm going to have some kind of sickness, at least let it be a sickness that doesn't prevent me from accomplishing what I want to accomplish in life. Kol ra'a, similarly, I'll take any kind of evil, velo isha ra'a. But whatever it is, please save me from an evil woman. So the Rush points out over here that this is referring to one's wife, that ultimately I'll take anything in life, but please just make sure that my wife is okay. V'omer Rav bar Mechasya, Omer Rav Chaim bar Gurya, Omer Rav. Im is actually an amazing Gemara as well. Im yiyu kol hayomim dio, if all of the seas were ink, va'agomim kol misim, and all of the marshes were quills, v'shamayim yirios, and all of the heavens were parchment, v'chol b'nei adam lavlerin, and all men were scribes, ein maspikim lichtov chalolo shel roshos. We would never be able to fully write the depths of leadership. What does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Chalada shol rashus, Rashi says, Omek libam shutzarech li yoslo. We would never be able to capture all of the things that leadership must think of. Liyoslo leiv, lekama medinos, lemasa kotsuv, ulekama melchamos. He has to figure out how to take care of all of his tributaries, how to levy taxes, how to wage wars, lekama mishpatim, different types of judgments, v'akol b'yom echad. It's interesting enough, Rabbi said, the way that many understand this Gemara is Rava bar Mechasi, name of Rav, is actually praising that difficult job of leadership. That we don't even understand what the leadership, this is about governmental leadership, has to go ahead and think about each and every day. And how much they have to keep in mind each and every day. This seems to be going in line with what the Mishnah Avos says, Heaven mispalel b'shalom shel roshos, that make sure to pray for the benefit of the welfare of the government. We live in a very different kind of world where it's popular to deconstruct people. So we like to deconstruct everyone, especially if someone's in the public eye. But the truth is, as much as you dislike the president or this one, at the end of the day, mamish, people work hard. People work hard, and we hope they work hard. They might not make the right decisions, at least from our perspective, but they work hard. Government in general works hard to secure the welfare of its inhabitants. So what Rava is saying over here is, we don't even understand all the things that they have to keep in mind each and every day in order to ensure our safety. He says, Micro, what's the pasuk that goes ahead and supports this? Amar Rav Misharshia, Shamayim Lorom, Va'aretz La'omek, the sky goes to the heights, the earth extends down to the depths, V'leiv Melochim Ein Chiker. Bless you. And the heart of a monarch has no measurement. Meaning the heart of the monarch has to go ahead and constantly think about all of these things. Va'amar Rav Bar Mechasya, Amar Rav Chama Bar Gurya, Amar Rav, Yotha Tanis L'cholom Ke'ish L'Na'ores. So Rav Chama Bar Gurya says in the name of Rav that a tainis, a fast, is good for a dream, like fire is to flax. So also we had this already in Brachas, that if a person has a dream, now remember there's a concept of tainis cholom, which means that if a person had a very distressing dream, then interestingly enough, there's not a lot of, the halacha doesn't define what distressing is. Because what's the definition of distressing? The definition of distressing is whatever you find distressing. So if a person has a very distressing dream, so the halacha is, a person is permitted, not obligated, but a person is permitted to fast for such a dream. And the Gemara says that fasting for a disturbing dream has a positive effect, just like fire has the flax. What does that mean? That just like if you set flax on fire, the flax is going to disappear, right? You're going to totally destroy the flax. So too, sometimes fasting for a negative dream has the ability to annul whatever decree may or may not have been communicated through that dream. Amar Rav Chista, Ubo Bayom. Rav Chista says, but the power of fasting for a dream is only when? If you fast on that day when you woke up. Amar Rav Yosi, listen to this, Afilu B'Shabbos. You're permitted to go ahead and fast for a kind of Cholom even on Shabbos. Even on Shabbos. And I will say, interestingly enough, the Shulchan Aruch does in fact paskin that way. That's one of the, now the logic behind that is, interestingly enough, that normally you're not allowed to fast on Shabbos because there's a din of Oneg Shabbos, a din of enjoyment of Shabbos, right? But the assumption is that if a person is so troubled by their dream, that they're not going to find any kind of enjoyment in the food, and the only thing that's potentially going to give them Oneg Shabbos is what? Is the actual tainis. So it's the one exception for fasting on Shabbos is tainis cholom. However, we're going to see there is a caveat to this. Thank you. Rabbi Yoshua ben Rav Idi ikla lebei Rav Ashi. So Rabbi Yoshua, the son of Rav Idi, went to the house of Rav Ashi of delay igla tilsa. So in honor of his bakavod the guest, see, he made it igla tilsa. I will say igla tilsa is a real delicacy. Rashi points out, what's the igla tilsa? Shlishi lebeten shehu mishubach. So an igla tilsa is a third born calf. Mipnei shabehema bekatnusa eina adayin bekocha va'avlat harishon usheni eina bari. So interestingly enough, the assumption is that the mother is still young when she gives birth to the first two. She's not as strong, and therefore the first two animals that are born are not as hardy or vibrant. But the idea is the third born calf is considered to be a delicacy. So the point that Gemara is making over here is that Rav Ashi made this delicacy for Rabbi Yoshua, because Rabbi Yoshua was such a bakavadik guest. Amrule, lito marmiti. So Rav Ashi says to Rabbi Yoshua, please eat something. Amrule hu, Rabbi Yoshua says, betainis yasivna, I'm sorry, but I'm sitting in a fast. Right? Meaning I'm in the midst of a fast. He was saying, I'm observing a tainis cholom. Amrule, v'lo savalei marla had Rabbi Yehuda, amr Rabbi Yehuda, lava adam ta'aniso poreya. But did you not learn? Do you not hold the statement of Rabbi Yehuda? Because Rabbi Yehuda literally says, well, a little translation over here is, lava adam ta'aniso, a person could borrow on his fast, uporeya, and can repay. Which means what? That if for some reason you begin your fast and there is need for you to break it, it's okay. You just have to what? You have to make it up. So meaning, okay, you don't get igla tilsa every single day, right? So igla tilsa is a good reason to break your fast, and you'll make it up the next day. Amarle tainis cholamu. To which Rav Ashi responded, to which Rabbi Yoshua responded, it's not just any fast, I'm fasting a tainis cholam. V'amar Rav bar Mechasi, Amar Rav Chama bar Gurya, Amar Rav, yafa tainis cholam ke'ish l'na'ures. That we learn that a tainis cholam is as effective as fire is to flax. But it only works what? If your mom is fasting on that day. And Rav Yosef said, even on Shabbos. And I've also said the halacha is that if a person were to observe a fast on Shabbos, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, you have to do a makeup fast to make up for fasting on Shabbos. Right? So if you so Musar Haskells, don't dream on Friday night. But the idea is, if you do a Tanis Chalom on Shabbos, which you're permitted to do, you still have to do a makeup fast for having fasted on Shabbos. Okay. So the Gemara says the following. V'mischilu in mafsikin, har mafsikin l'kriya shema. So remember, okay, now going back to the Mishnah. So what did the Mishnah say? The Mishnah said the following. That the Mishnah on Testament Days spoke about all of the things that you're not supposed to begin, samoch l'mincha. But if you started them, you don't have to stop. However, the Mishnah ends off in a very interesting way. The Mishnah ends off by saying, "Mafsikin lekriya shema, ve'im mafsikin letfila." You have to stop for shana, you have to stop for tefila. So the Gemara says, "I don't understand." Ha tana l'resha, ein mafsikin. We already learned this. Right? Meaning, the Mishnah itself is talking about tefila. It's talking about tefila. So we understand that you don't have to stop for tefila. And the inference, of course, from the Mishnah is, it's only tefila that you wouldn't have to stop for, but kriya shema, which is d'oraisa, you would stop for. To which the Gemara says, no. Seifa asa'on l'divrei Torah. The last phrase of the Mishnah is coming to teach us another halacha. It's coming to teach us that words of Torah. What does that mean? This sanya, or Talmud Torah, I should say. This sanya, learning of Raisa. Chaverim shayu oskin batorah. Now, chaverim literally means friends. In this case, it could be means friends also, but it really means a chabura, a group. A group of people learning Torah. Mafsikin mikriyashma. Vein mafsikin letzvila. They have to stop for Shema, but they don't have to interrupt their Torah study to daven Shmona Esrei. Am Reb Yochanan, lo shanu elo kegon Reb Shimon ben Yochai, the chaverov, shetorasan unnasan. So says Reb Yochanan, when is that true? That's only true for someone like Rashbi, Reb Shimon ben Yochai and his friends, shetorasan unnasan. Was a very important statement. Torasa unnasan means what? People whose sole occupation throughout the entire day is Torah. People who do not stop learning Torah for anything. So those type of people who constantly learn Torah, they don't have to stop their Torah learning for Tzvila, which is Drabana. They would only have to stop their Torah learning for Shema. Aval kigon anu, listen to this. However, says Rabbi Yochanan, but for people like us, mafsikin l'kriya shema l'tfila. Now what does it mean, people like us, Rashi says? Aval anu, hoyil u'mafsikin Torah sinu l'umino sinu, koshken shenafsik l'tfila. We go to work. So if we are going to go ahead and stop our learning to go to work, then what? Then it goes without saying that we stop our learning to go. So we stop our learning for tefillah as well. So I says, "But one second, but Tanya, but we learned." Kashen she'in mafsikin letefillah, kach ein mafsikin lekriyashma. But we learn that the same way that you don't go ahead and stop for tefillah, you don't stop for kriyashma. So this Bryce seems to contradict what we just said before, that you don't have to stop for Shema. No, the Gemara says it's a very specific case. Kitani Ahi, when was that stated? Be Ibor Shana. Well, so that's talking about Ibor Shana. What's Ibor Shana? Rashi says, Ibor Shana literally means when they would go ahead and declare a leap year. Rashi says, Shahayu Olin Shiva La'aliyah, seven men would go up to the attic, seven of the greatest Hamidi Chachamim, Vinosin Vinosnin Imashana Ru'uyo Utsrichalis Aber. And they would decide, Ibor Shana literally means you would impregnate the year, right? Because the Lashon of, why does he use that image? Because you would give the year, you know, you'd give the year an extra month. You'd give an year an extra extension. So the way that Ibor Shana worked was the seven greatest Talmidei Chacham would seclude themselves, would put themselves in seclusion, and would decide whether or not it was necessary. Remember, Rashi points out over here, Ala Aviv Ala Peros Im Al Tkufa. The only reason they would make an Ibor Shana was for one reason, is because Pesach has to be Chag Ha'aviv. Pesach has to be in the spring. So if it turned out that they were going to see that Pesach was going to fall out in the winter, that's when they would decide Ibor Shana. So they would have to try to figure this all out. So the Gemara says over here, the Amar of Adabar Ava v'chein tanu sabi da ha'grunya, because the Amar of Adabar Ava and the elders of Han'grunya said, Amar of Elazar ben Bar Tzadok, kishayinu oskin be'ibor shana b'yavne, when we would involve ourselves in figuring out whether or not to declare a new month when we are in Yavne, lo hayinu mafsikin, lo the kriyashma, lo the tefillah. we would stop for nothing. We'll say, which makes sense. Tell us, take a look at Tosfos in just a moment. Tosfos v'Iber Shana. Tosfos says, Shelo yiskalkalu hamoados. Because the Ibur Shana is so important. Because the Ibur Shana will determine ultimately how all the Yom Tovim fall out. That is so important that you interrupt for nothing, even for Kriyat Shema. So I'll say, just so you understand, you ask yourself, well, how do Chazal have the right to do that? How do the rabbis have the right to say that you shouldn't be Mekayim Mitzvah D'Oraisa? So what's the answer to that? Yesh koach biyad chachamim lakor davar min haTorah v'shed l'akasa. Bless you. The rabbis have the ability to uproot something from the Torah. By what? By telling you to be passive. It's the same way. How did Chazal have the right to declare Yom Tov Sheni and tell us not to put on tefillin? Right? After all, tefillin is a mitzvah, as same midoraisa. So the answer is because Chazal can never tell us not to do something by actively violating the Torah, but they can abrogate biblical law by telling us to be passive. So in this particular situation over here, Ibur Shana was too important. You're parted from even Kriyat Shema. Under normal circumstances, even someone who's Torah and Nasan, even someone who's perpetually and constantly engaged in Torah, he has a ptur from Tefillah Shmona Esrei, which is the Rabbanon, but would still have to stop for Kriyat Shema. Mishnah. Lo yetzei achayit b'machto samoch hashem. So we're back to Otzol. A tailor should not go ahead. Lo yitzei achayit. The tailor should not go out b'machto with his needle. Samoch lechashecha. Samoch lechashecha literally means what? Close to nightfall. Close to nightfall. Why? Shema yishkach v'yetzei. Because if he's going out of it so close to Shabbos, he may what? He may forget about it and may end up carrying it. He's used to carrying it with him, so he may forget and carry it. Similarly, v'lo halav lar beklumuso. Similarly, a scribe should not go out with his quill close to Shabbos because he may end up transporting it on Shabbos itself. V'lo yafla eskelov. So a person should not de-louse their clothing. So we'll discuss exactly what this has to do with the Mishnah. V'lo yikra lo or haner. And nor should you read by the light of the candle. Rashi says, Lo'or haner, lo'ikra lo'or haner, b'sefer, shema yata haner la'avi ha'shem lefnei ha'psila, shi'id lak yafa, v'nimtza ma'avi b'shabbos. So we'll discuss when exactly this is referring to. What the Mishnah is saying is, you should not read by candlelight on Shabbos. Why? What are we concerned? Remember, when they say ner, it's not like a candle that we say. When they say ner for them was more like a lantern. They had a receptacle with oil. The oil had the wick. So what's the issue? The issue is that as the oil would go down, so the candle would flicker. So how would you get the wick to burn bright? You would tilt the utensil to move the oil towards the wick. That's a problem on Shabbos because that's called Havara. Anytime you add fuel or you somehow amplify a fire on Shabbos, that's one of the 39 melachos. So therefore the Mishnah says, you may not go ahead and read directly by the candlelight on Shabbos. Shema yateh, well we'll see, the Gemara will say, Shema yateh esmeh, because you may tilt the candle. Be'emes amru, in reality they said the following. Now we'll discuss what be'emes amru means, because that's an interesting formulation. What does it mean, in truth they said? What does that mean? We'll see. Be'emes amru, hachazin roe echan tinokos korin. It's interesting if you have the chazin. Now Rashi points out, who is the chazin? Take a look at Rashi. Chazin hakneses hamakre shiva hakruin betorah. So the first approach of Rashi is that the chazin is what we would call today the gabbai. The gabbai, right? He's the one who calls up. He's the one who calls up the seven guys for the alios. Upamim she'inu yodea heichan tzrichan likros lemachar. V'roa heichan korin tinoko shal beis rabin b'shabes zu, v'heim korin b'seidu la'arne v'yisakneses, v'yodeya shu shaparsha shal shabes zu. It's interesting enough, there were times when the gabbai lost the place. So where would the gabbai look to? The gabbai would look to the school children, right? Because the school children always knew where they were going to be up to. Okay, that's the first approach of Rashi. Loshon Acher, which seems to be the more accepted approach, melame tinokos. Chazin over here does not refer to the shamas, to the gabbai. But the chazin over here refers to the cheder rebbe, right? The rebbe who would teach the little kids melame tinokos, v'roa heichon yaschilu lemachar v'heichu yisamu parshio sein. So what would happen? The chazin, the rebbe for the little kids, would walk around and he would show the kids where they need to be. So the Mishnah says that the chazin is permitted to use the candlelight in order to show the children where they have to be. However, avalhu lo yikra, but he himself may not read by the candlelight. We'll see why that is. Kiyotzebo, similarly, lo yochal hazovim hazova, a person who's a zov should not eat with a zova, right? These are people who are both tameim, man and woman who are tameim, because of certain types of emissions. So they should not eat together, mipnei hergel aveira, because we're concerned of sinful activity. Rashi says, mipnei hergel aveira, mipnei shemitoch shemisyachadin yavo liv ol zova shehi bekoris. We're concerned that if they eat together alone, we'll discuss what exactly the zava and zava are talking about over here, that they may come to engage in some type of relationship. And again, a relationship with the zava carries a penalty of kares. All right. No. This is not some. This is any time. We'll see. The Mishnah jumps around a little bit because the Mishnah begins with a discussion of things that you shouldn't do prior to nightfall because you may end up doing them on nightfall. Then transitions to the Ner case. Then goes from the Ner case to the Malami Tinokos. Then goes from Malami Tinokos to the Zav and the Zava. We'll see. There is a common thread. It's not awesome. So the Gemara says we learn over there. Mishnah says over there. Lo ya'amot adam mishnas ayachav ishte b'shesarabim. A person should not go ahead and stand in the Rosh HaYachid and drink in the Rosh HaRabim. Birshus HaRabim v'yishte birshus HaYachid. What's the case over here? Take a look at Rashi. Lo ya'amor adam birshus HaYachid v'yoshit piv v'rosho the Rosh HaRabim. So what's the case, Rabbi Sassik? Imagine the scene. A person is standing in the Rosh HaYachid and he extends his head into the Rosh HaRabim to drink there. Rashi says v'yoshit piv v'rosho l'rsham le'echos kli Village post to grab a utensil and to drink. Gzeira shemayotziak li'elav v'nimtza mischayiv chadas. So we'll say, if I'm standing in Rosh HaYachid and I, technically speaking, extend my head into Rosh HaRabim and I take a drink there, technically speaking, that's fine. But the Rabbanan said, we don't want you doing that. Why? What are we concerned about? Because it's a very easy thing for you just to lean back and bring that kli with you. And if you bring that kli with you, what have you just done? You've just committed an act of hotza'ah. However, avalan hichnis rosho veruba lamakum shushosa, but if you put your head and most of your body into the place where you are drinking mutter, so if you were to go ahead and extend, even if your feet are in Rosh HaYachid, but you were to extend most of your body into the Rosh HaRabim, then that would be okay. V'chein begat. And similarly with a wine press. We'll discuss that in just a moment. So the Gemara asks, Iboilehu, Carmelis mai. What about a carmelis? Meaning, right? So the Mishnah spoke about I'm standing in Rosh HaYachid, extending my head into Rosh HaRabim, or standing in Rosh HaRabim, extending my head into Rosh HaYachid. What about a carmelis? So the Gemara says kigon bika. Rashi says kigon bika. The midrabanan who the asul lahachnis ulahotzi. Mahu Rashi says lamo b'rishus yechur b'rishus HaRabim b'yoshit rosh lechatchilu l'socho v'yishta. So here's an interesting shayla. Let's say I'm standing in Rosh HaYachid. Can I extend my head into a carmelis and drink? So the Gemara says, well, Abai says, literally means it's the same thing. Meaning, no different to a carmelis. Same thing, Rashi says, hihi, kishim sha'asarnu zu'a mishnah, seinu kach zu'a sura. The same way that you can't stand in Rosh HaYachid and extend your head into Rosh HaRabim, or vice versa, you can't stand in one rishos and extend your head into a carmelis. A carmelis is a separate rishos, and therefore you can't do it. Rava says, no. He gufa gzeira. Rava says, what are you talking about? Rava says, is there anything wrong with standing in Rosh HaYachid and extending your head into Rosh HaRabim and drinking? No. What happened? The Rabbanon made a gzeira. And the gzeira was, we don't want you to do it, lest you come to commit an act of otzah. So says Rava, I don't understand. Carmelis itself is a Rosh HaRabbanon. Right? Carmelis itself is a rabbinic Rosh. Midda Oraisa. It's usually just called a Rosh HaYachid, right? So now we're going to say what? In a Rosh HaRabbanon, we're going to make another layer of rabbinic gezeirah. It doesn't make sense. So in Rosh HaRabbanon, which in and of itself is not really its own Rosh HaRabbanon, I'm now going to go ahead and add on an additional layer of rabbinic enactments and say that I can't have a drink in there even if I'm still standing in a different Rosh HaRabbanon. So Abai says, where do I know that we don't call this in Halacha a gezeirah l'gezeirah? That normally we say we don't make a gzeira, we don't pile one rabbinic gzeira on top of another. Sabai says, where do I know this? Diktani v'chein begat. Because the Mishnah says, this also applies in a wine press. My gut, what is the wine press? What is the wine press? Irishos Hayochid. If the wine press is considered to be Irish Hayochid, then what? Tanino. We've already learned that in the first statement of Mishnah. Remember, I said the Mishnah that he's referring to is the Mishnah that the Gemara quoted. That a person should not stand in Rosh Hashayachid and drink in Rosh Sarabi, or stand in Rosh Sarabi and drink in Rosh Hashayachid. And the Mishnah just said, V'chin Begat. And the same applies to a wine press. So Abai says, what does it mean? What's the wine press? If the wine press is Rosh Hashayachid, that was already covered by the first statement. If Rosh Sarabim Tanina, if it's Rosh Sarabim, it's already covered by the first case, by the first statement as well. El Olav Carmelis. Rather, what must be the answer? The answer must be that a gat, a wine press, is considered to be a karmelis. And what does the Mishnah mean when it says v'chein begat? That this same gezeira applies in a karmelis as well. So the first statement of the Mishnah tells us that this gezeira applies from Rosh Hashayachid to Rosh Hasarabim. That the second statement says it applies from Rosh Hasarabim to Rosh Hashayachid. And the third statement says what? That it also applies in a karmelis. It also applies in a karmelis. Rava Amar, v'chein begat le'inyan meiser. Rava says no. The Chain Begat does not actually referring to this case of Shabbos, but Chain Begat is actually referring to another case of Meiser. What does that mean? This Nan. It's a very interesting situation. This Nan. Shosin al Hagat, Bein al Achamin, Bein al Atzone, Upatur Divra Rabbi Meir. It's a very interesting halacha. Now, remember, the halacha is that under normal circumstances, in order to go ahead and partake of any item, bless you, you first must have taken the trumos and maestros from the item. However, that only applies if the item is in its finished form. If the item is in an unfinished form, you are permitted to go ahead and halacha lemaisa. You're permitted to go ahead halacha lemaisa and eat what we call an achila sarai, a snack from it. A snack from it. So the Gemara suggests the following: shosin alagas. The Mishnah says you are permitted to drink literally on top of the wine press, over the wine press, bein alachamin bein alatzonan. And that is true whether what? Whether you diluted the wine with warm water or with cold water. Right? Well, say the normal way they would dilute wine is with warm water. Interestingly enough, that seemed to be the general practice. So you can go upater, and you could drink this wine without taking trumos and maisers. Take a look at Rashi. Ling and maiser. Vishtia alagat mamish. You're drinking literally over the wine press. Shalo akrum yisham lahotziya chutza. You have not taken the wine outside of the pressing area. Hav yeshtia sarai. This is considered to be like a snack drinking. Upatur mimaiser calls man shel yorad labar, because wine is not considered to be a finished product until when? Until you put it into the pit. Now, what does that mean? Pit? Into a vat. They would put it in a holding vat, and that's where they would leave the wine. Shu gemar malach to lemaiser. Aval lo tziyam yishan habekeva kevan shein bedaito lahachzir amosar va'atav lo nikmar malach to lemaiser. So therefore, again, the case of the gat is where you are drinking over the wine press. So you're taking the wine from the press itself, which is not in its finished state, and you're drinking it in the actual press itself. Because if you were to take it outside of the press, outside of the building of the press, that would show that for you, this wine is finished, and therefore be chayv in trumos and maestros. So therefore Rabbi Meir holds that halach lemaisa, this wine that you drink in the press itself, is patur from trumos and maestros, whether you diluted it with warm water or cold water. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok, Mechayev. You're right, there's several issues. Right. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok, Mechayev. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok says you're chayev. He says you're chayev. That at this point in time he holds that if you're already drinking it, halach lemaisa, it's clear that it's finished for you, and therefore it's chayev and shumos and maisros. The chachamim say, alachamin chayev. If you diluted it with warm water, you're chayev. Alatzonein potter. But if you diluted it with cold water, you don't have to take trumos and maestros. Why? Mipnei shumachzir es hamosar. Well, see, here's what's interesting. Apparently, once you diluted wine concentrate with warm water, you can't really, if you didn't finish it, you can't throw it back in to the vat. But if you went ahead and you diluted it with cold water, I guess, again, whatever the effects would have on the water, on the wine, you could throw that back into the vat. I guess it's talking about your vat. All right? So the idea over here is, the Rabbanon are being mechalik. If you diluted it with warm water, which means that this is your formal act of drinking, this is all or nothing, you can't go back and return it, then halacha lemaisa, that's considered to be a finished product, and you can't drink without separating trumos and maestros from it. But if it's cold water, where you can return the rest, then it's clear there's an achilas arai, and therefore you're not chayim with trumos and maestros. So what's happening? So okay, fine. So the Gemara goes on. Tanan. Tanan. So also, I just want to point out, this still remains the fundamental machlokes between Abaye and Rava. Fundamental machlokes Abaye and Rava. As to whether or not we say, Gozrinan gzera ligzera. Do we pile one rabbinic enactment, one rabbinic gzera, one rabbinic prohibition upon another, or not? The fundamental machlokes seems to be in the case, the first comes up in this case over here of Carmelis. Right? Can I stand in a, let's say, Rosh HaSayachit and drink in a Carmelis? So Abaye will say no, because a Carmelis is a separate Rosh HaSayachit. Say, you can't do it from Rosh HaSayachit to Rosh HaSayachit. You can't do it from Rosh HaSayachit to Carmelis. Rava on the other hand says no. The only time it's Aser is in real Rishuyos. But it's saying that to begin with is a rabbinic gezera. We're not going to pile another rabbinic gezera on top of this rabbinic Rishus. So the Gemara goes on. Tanan. Look, now the Gemara is going to try to test this machlokes again. Lo yetzi achayit b'machto, samuch lecha shecha, shema yishkach b'yetze. So what did the Mishnah say? Taylor can't go out with his needle, samuch lecha shecha, prior to become, right before it becomes dark on Erev Shabbos, because we're concerned that what? That maybe he'll keep carrying it even after nightfall. So the Gemara says, my love, ditchuva lo b'bigdo, are we not dealing with a case where is the needle, Rav Osai? The needle is stuck in his clothing. Stuck in his clothing. And therefore what? Let's take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, my love, go almost right across. Now remember, if the tailor walks out with the needle stuck in his clothing, that's not considered to be a normative act of transferring an item. Right? That's like Kila Achaya. Right? That's like the Shinui. So the Gemara, technically speaking, if you were to go ahead, right? If the teller were to go ahead, let's say on Shabbos itself, and stick the needle in his clothing and walk out from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, that would not be an Issa D'oraisa. That would be an Issa D'rabbanan, because that's not considered to be a normative act of carrying. However, what do we see from here? V'kagaz Rosh Samach L'chashecha, Atu Chashecha, Alma Gazuna Le Suri Shabbos Gzera Ligzera. So what do we see from this Mishnah, Rabbi Osai? Carrying the needle in your clothing when it's embedded, right? Carrying it stuck in your clothing is to begin with an Isser Dirabanan, a rabbinic Gzera. And yet, what does the Mishnah say? We don't want you to go out like that prior to Shabbos. What? Lest you come to do it on Shabbos. So what does that show? That shows that it's Gzera Ligzera. Right, we're piling one rabbinic gezerah. So this seems to support Abaye. The Gemara says, "Lo, that's not the case of the Mishnah. Did not get lebiyode. No, the case of the Mishnah is not about say where what, where you're putting the needle in your clothing. The case of the Mishnah rather is what, where you're actually holding, you're carrying the needle itself. It'd be mamish a real gezerah. So therefore, it's not gezerah legezerah. It's just a gezerah. Tashma lo yetsi hachai. The Gemara says, okay, well, what do you do about the following statement? Lo yetsi hachai b'machto." Hatchuva lo bebigdo. Okay, so now you have another brisa. The brisa says what? A tailor may not go out with a needle that is embedded in his clothing. My love be'erev Shabbos. Is this not referring to Shabbos? Erev Shabbos, excuse me. And therefore we see what? That indeed goes v'in gzir l'gzirah. Lo, ki tanya hahi b'Shabbos. No, not so. What is the case? The case is on Erev Shabbos. Excuse me. And therefore what? It's not a gzera the gzera, then what is it? It's only one gzera. V'hatanya. Okay, Gemara said, last try. The Braisa says, Lo yetzi hachayit b'machat hatchuba b'bigdo b'erev Shabbos im chashecha. Alright, so we can't get more explicit than this. Right? So now the Braisa says that the tailor may not go out with the needle that is embedded in his clothing on Erev Shabbos im Chashecha, means before it gets dark. So now the Braisa is explicitly saying, what they're both saying, that he may not carry the needle in his clothing on Erev Shabbos before it gets dark. Hamani, so whose opinion this? So the Braisa said, this seems to support Abaye's position, that indeed we do say Gzera L'Gzera. Mar says, no, you've just stepped into another machlokes. Hamani, Rabbi Yehudi Hida Amar, Uman Derech Umnaso Chayiv. Because Rabbi Yehuda holds that any time a craftsman carries his utensil in a way that craftsmen carry their utensils, even if what? Even if for other people this would not be the normal way of carrying something, the uman is chayiv. So I'm also saying in general, on Shabbos, right? In Shabbos, you're only chayiv if you do a malachas mach Shabbos. Right? It's not just chayiv for doing malacha. You have to do a malacha in not just a constructive, but in a normative fashion as well. If something is done in a non-normative fashion, you're not chayiv. That's why, technically speaking, if I go ahead and I close my eyes on a penny, I squeeze a penny between my eyelids, and I walk out like that from a shayachatir shesarabim, I'm not chayiv for that midoraisa on Shabbos. Why? That's a non-normative act of transfer. So Rabbi Yehuda happens to hold that aloha lemaisa, it was not uncommon for craftsmen to transport their tools of the trade in ways that you and I would not normally carry an item. So Rabbi Yehuda holds that even though it's not normal for us, it's what? It's normal for them, and therefore they are chayiv if indeed they go ahead and transfer their item in a way that's normal for their trade. This sanyo, because now the Gemara goes and gives a bunch of these examples. Lo yetzeh chayiv b'machta atchuvah lo b'bigdo. Right, a tailor should not go out with his needle embedded in his clothing. Velo nagar b'kisam shabaozno. A carpenter shouldn't go out with a ruler behind his ear. Velo sorik b'meshicha shabaozno. Literally, a comber should not go out. The meshicha, Rashi points out over here, shem meshicha hu koshra kotzim, with the cord. So apparently this comber was a person who was responsible for fluffing up fabric. So he had a cord that he used to tie up the loose ends, shouldn't go out with this. Velo gardi bi'ira sheba ozno, Rashi points out over here, ira hu tsemer o tsemer gefen, shesosim bo pia kona la'achar sheniach besocho pakios. Okay, so the weaver should not go out with his instrument, sheba ozno, on the back of his ear. Velo tsava bidugma sheba tsaba. And someone who dyes wool used to walk around a dugma, I don't know what you call it. You know, he would go out with a piece of wool that was dyed all different colors, as if to show a sample, piece of fabric, where essentially he would show, these are all the colors I can do. So he used to wear that around his neck. Velo shulchani bedina sheva azno. And usually a money changer used to go out with a coin behind his ear. Now, why he would do that coin, that would be for a couple of different reasons. Either he used to keep a standard coin behind his ear, to say he would know, remember, shulchanios, money changers, would often have to deal with all types of currencies. Yeah, he wanted to keep a standard currency with him, okay? However, v'im yotza patra aval osad rebbe meir. So, what's the common denominator, Rabbi Osad, in all of these cases? For us, these would all be considered to be non-normative forms of transfer, because they're holding stuff behind their ear. That's not normally the way you hold something. But for these people, that was the normal way. So Rabbi Meir holds Pater Aval Aser. Pater Aval Aser means what, Rabbi Osai? It's Pater, meaning it's Moter Midoraisa, that's not called Hotzah, but Midrabanan it's Aser. So apparently, Rabbi Meir doesn't, according to Rabbi Meir, there's one formula for Hotzah. Hotza means, in order to be chayav for Shabbos, you have to transport an item in a normative fashion. Not normative for your trade, normative the way that what? Most people will do it. So if you did it in a non-normative way, even if what? Normal. It's normal for you, right? You're still not chayav. However, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Doraisa, correct. You can't transfer anything. Yeah. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Uman derech umnaso chayav. Ushar kol adam potter. Rabbi Yehuda paskins the halacha lemaisa. No, in this case, uman is chayiv for carrying an item in a way that is normal for their trade. Now, also, I want to point out, Rabbi Yehuda is only dafka referring to situations over here where someone's carrying something in a way that is normal for his particular trade. Meaning, if somebody has some crazy way of carrying something, and for him it's normal, but for no one else carries it, even the other members of his trade, Rabbi Yehuda would still say he's potter. Rabbi Yehuda is saying, if it's known that the carpenters put their ruler over here, right? If it's known that the dyers go ahead and wear their fabric over here, that's considered to be normal for their trade, and therefore they are chayiv for that type of hotzah, but everyone else will be potter. So the Gemara says, Tani Chada. Interestingly enough, we have another braisa. Lo yetze hazov bikiso. V'im yatza pata. So I'll say, interestingly enough, the Zav used to wear a kis. A kis is a pouch. Now he would wear a kis over the makom mila. We'll see why in just a moment. So if the Zav, who is this person experiencing emissions, if the Zav goes ahead and wears his kis, where's the pouch? So the aloch is lo yetzi hazav bikis. He should not go out wearing the pouch. V'im yatza, but if he did, patra aval aser. It's aser midrabanan. Why? The assumption is because it's considered to be a non-normative act of transfer. V'tanya idach, another braisa says, lo yetze, he should not go out, v'im yotza, chayiv chatos. But if he goes out, then what Rabbi Osai? He's chayiv chatos. It's chayiv chatos, which means doraisa. So what's going on over here? So which one is Rabbi Osai? Are you chayiv, not chayiv? Amar Rabbi Yosef, lo kasha, ha Rabbi Meir, ha Rabbi Yehuda. So you want to say, it's not a kasha. two brisos reflect two different opinions, right? The one that says that you're chayiv, that's Rabbi Yehuda. Because what does Rabbi Yehuda hold, Rabbi Osai? Rabbi Yehuda holds that even though if you engage in what's considered to be a non-normative act of transfer, but for your particular group, this is normal, then what? According to Rabbi Yehuda, you're chayiv. Right? So you're right. Under normal circumstances, it's not normal to wear such a pouch. But if you're a Zov, it's normal to wear such a pouch. And therefore, Aloch Mais Rabbi Yehuda will hold for your category of people, this is considered to be, for you people, right, that's considered to be a normative act of Hotzah, and therefore you're Chayiv. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir is the one who holds that one, Rabbi Osai. There's one category of Hotzah. And how is normative Hotzah defined, Rabbi Osai? How do you define normative Hotzah? By the majority of people. And the majority of people don't wear a kiss around the Makom Mila, and therefore Halacha L'Maisa, this is considered to be a non-normative act, and therefore it's not totally mutter, but it's not Chayim Midoraisa, it's Potter Aval Aser, it's only Aser Midrabanon. So the Gemara says, one second, Amrei Abaye, Abaye says, one second, let's define this a little bit more. Amor, the Shamisle the Rabbi Meir, the Midi Delav Hainu Arche, the Midi Dehainu Arche, Mishamisle. Abaye says like this, when did Rabbi Meir say you're potter? With something that's totally not normal. But something that is normal, what do you really hold? This way, well, now, what does this mean? Take a look at Rashi. It's the second wide line in Rashi. V'midi d'lav hainu arche. Kigon kol elu hashinuyin l'malo. Like all of the cases stated above. Ein derech hotza oso ele biyad afilu l'uman. Ele b'shosh rotza l'hachriz l'atzmo. Shehu uman. So listen to this. So Abaye says something fascinating. He says, carpenters, for example, don't normally wear their rulers over here. When did a carpenter put his ruler over here? When did the tailor put his needle in his lapel? When did the dyer put his fabric on his neck? When they wanted to advertise their services. Right? When they want to show people, hey, I'm a carpenter, I'm available for work. Right? Because the truth is when you're holding something in your hand, people aren't gonna see it. If you put something behind your ear, right, you put the coin by your ear, that's something people will notice. People will notice your trade and they will know that you're available for hire. That's what Rabbi Meir said. Meaning, because even for a carpenter, what's the normal way that a carpenter transports his ruler? In his hand. How does the tailor go ahead and transport his needle? In his hand. How does the dyer, all these, the normal way they would do it, and therefore Rabbi Meir holds that even though, yes, sometimes they would transport it behind their ear, stuck in their lapel, that's not normal even for them. Even for them they would carry normally. Okay, it wasn't uncommon for them. That's when Rabbi Meir holds that I don't hold that that's called normal hotzah, because even for them that was not the norm. It says Abaye, in this case of the Zav, it's absolutely normal. Meaning, this is what a Zav does. A Zav, we'll discuss why. A Zav wears the kiss. A Zav wears this pouch around his Mako Mila. See, even Rabbi Meir should hold that this is considered to be a normative act of Otzav for the Zav. To which the Gemara says, the Ilotema Achi, because if you don't say that, Elame Ata, Hedyo Chechokak Kav Bebikas B'Shabbos Remeir Hachanami Dlo Mechayiv. If that's the case, then you'd have to say the following. If a non-craftsman, a non-carpenter, goes ahead and bores out of a piece of wood, a kav's size hole, you'd have to say, L'Rabbi Meir Hachanami Dlo Mechayiv. And I will say, what does this mean? That halacha l'maisa, you have to say the following. Look at Rashi. Head yod shechaka kav bebegas, hoil ve'eno uman ve'ein derech hakika bechach, hachanami depat Rabbi Meir. So we'll say, would you say that according to Rabbi Meir, if a non-craftsman goes ahead and makes something out of a piece of wood, is he chayv on Shabbos or not? So you'd have to say, that's what? If you hold that according to Rabbi Meir, that halacha l'maisa, only if you do something that is done in a specific way, meaning according to specific, say differently. What Abaye is saying is like this. Rabbi Meir has to hold that something that is normative, even if it's not normative for all people, is chayiv on Shabbos, as long as what? As long as what you're doing is normative for your subgroup. Because if you don't say that, then Rabbi Meir will essentially say that there are many cases of Shabbos that you'll never be chayiv for. Because if Rabbi Meir holds that Halach Lamaisa, the only time you're chayiv is if you do something that is mamish targeted for you, then according to Rabbi Meir, that would mean that if a non-craftsman goes ahead and bores out a hole from a piece of wood, makes a receptacle for a piece of wood, that he shouldn't be chayav because he's not a craftsman. That obviously is not true, because what he's engaging in Rabosai is what? Is a ma'isa malacha. Is a ma'isa malacha. Even though it's not perfect like an uman, so Rabbi Meir has to hold that when the zav goes out with the pouch, as much as you're right, normal people are not going out with such a pouch, but for a zav it's normative, therefore he's chayav. To which the Gemara says the following. Now we're back. So now, essentially, the way we first tried to reconcile the two brisos was how? By saying, because remember, one brisa says that the zav is chayif or in the pouch, one brisa says the zav is not chayif or in the pouch. The first way we wanted to answer up was to say, the brisa that says you're chayif reflects the view of Rabbi Yehuda, the brisa that says you're potter reflects the view of Rabbi Meir. Now the Abai has essentially refuted that by saying that even Rabbi Meir would hold that what? Right, that you're chayiv for the zav wearing the pouch. So we need a new answer. What's the new answer? So the Gemara says, Lo kasha, kan bizav bal shtei ri'os, kan bizav bal gimel ri'os. The brisa that says that your potter, that your chayiv, is talking about a zav who had two emissions, versus the brisa that says that your chayiv is talking about the zav who had three emissions. Maishna zav bal shtei ri'os, the chayiv, right? Maishna zav bal shtei ri'os, the chayiv. Right, so, I'm sorry. I said just the opposite. Excuse me. The brisa that's talking about your chayiv, talking about a zav that's only at two emissions, versus the brisa that says that your potter is for three emissions. So what's the distinction? So zav bal shtei ri'os the chayiv dimi boy le libdika. Well, it's like because the halacha is like this: if a zav has two emissions, see, so it's called shomer yom keneged yom. He has to have a day of tara. Once he has three emissions, he's chayiv two things. Number one, he has to keep shivanikim, he has to have seven clean days. And number two, he has to bring karbanos. So if he had two emissions, he must have the kiss. Why? Because he needs to know if he has a third emission or not. Versus, the assumption is the guy who already has three emissions, he already has shivanikim, he has to bring the karban, he doesn't need the kiss. He doesn't need the kiss, right? And therefore, if he wears the kiss out on Shabbos, he's chayiv. Twitch the Gemara says, one second. Zav bal gimom nami mi boile lesira. That's not true, because even the zav who had three emissions, he also needs the kiss. Why, Rabosai? Because he's obligated to keep shivanikim, seven clean days, and so he has to check if he's clean. Because if it turns out that he had another emission, then what? Then he has to start the Shimon HaKim, he has to start the seven clean days all over again. To which the Gemara says, no, because you could set up the case as what? Where he had his third emission that day on Shabbos. So therefore, I also remember, Shimon HaKim won't start until when? Until the next day. So technically speaking, he doesn't need the kiss that day, because he can have as many emissions as he wants that day. He's not going to change his status. He has to bring karbanos. He has to do shemenikim, and the seven clean days won't start until the next day. To which the Gemara says, one second. But there's another reason why he needs the kiss. V'hami boile kedesh lo yitnefu kelov. He needs the kiss for another reason, which is what? He said his clothing shouldn't get dirty. His clothing shouldn't get dirty, right? He shouldn't mess up his clothing with these emissions. To which the Gemara answered, this will stop. And therefore the Gemara is suggesting is, therefore, even the Zav Bal Shalosh Re'ios, even the Zav who had three emissions, and the third emission is on Shabbos, Shivan Akiyam can't stand until the next day, should still not be chayiv for wearing the pouch out. Why? Because the pouch helps protect his clothing. To which the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Zeira, Hai Tana Hu Da Amar, because this Tana says, Kol Atzulei Tinif Lo Kachashiv, that any garment that is worn to simply prevent the soiling of your other garments is not considered to be a halachic wearing, and therefore you would be chayiv for transporting that garment. We'll stop over here. We'll pick up with this concept in Yetzer Hashem tomorrow. Shkoyach.